served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Deep understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled deceit. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages bypassed? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomsluts.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history.
Hey, Obama, you've got to get us out of here now!
I won't let you down. I won't let you down, son.
Revolution.
Out of these gates, we've got a better chance of survival if we work together. Do you understand? If we stay together, we survive.
Pleased to be you.
Hold the line. Stay with me. If you find yourself alone, riding in green fields with the sun on your face, do not be troubled.
Time for honoring yourself will soon be at an end.
Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Are you a man who once said death smiles at us all? All a man can do is smile back. All a man can do is smile back.
Is this not why you're here? Is this not why you're here? Two feathers in the house, baby, baby. What's up, people? Happy belated Thanksgiving. Boy, I tell you what, just started my new vacation, and so far I just got finished eating, another plate of that good round of Thanksgiving dinner that I had to put together, and a lot, a good couple of dishes, and I tell you what, folks, I wasn't disappointed. Man, you talk about it tastes good. Oh, my goodness. Must have did something right. I tell you that. Boy, look. And just starting my vacation, too. Boy, you know it feels good, but I work all year long for this, boy. Welcome, everybody. You're listening to the Cognitive Reality Show. It's me, Two Feathers, on the number one listener supported station in the land. And you know what? We're going to take that number one spot all with your help, the listener. We're gonna make this thing possible. We're going to take that number one spot of on Talk Stream Live above these people talking about evil spirits and being dead and all this stuff. But you know what's happening on Revolution Radio? We're live. And we let you know that we're doing a fundraiser. If you happen to be a business owner and you are loving this station and the type of information that's coming out there on these airwaves, hey, get on our circuit. come aboard Revolution Radio, you know, and note that you, because you're a business owner, for a measly old $25 a month, you can find yourself right on Revolution Radio with a nice little beautiful banner. You know what? You'll be glad that you did. And we do crypto here, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash and Ethereum. And Ethereum was like down to 2,000. I think Bitcoin is like over 20,000. So, yeah, we do crypto here as well. So if you'd like to come check us out, go check us out on our website. You know, if you want to give every month or one-time donation, either way, it's all good. www.revolution.radio, freedomslips.net, freedomslips.org. Have a look around, and everything's greatly appreciated, and we're just thankful that people come and have a listen, because there's always something to grasp a hold of when you come to this station. You're definitely going to take away from something. I'd like to welcome my main man that shoots on target and don't wind up in the crosshairs. Sergeant Miller, Charlie Mike, are you in the house? What's happening, Sarge?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm ready for the roll. Congratulations on your reward of a vacation.
Man, son. Much needed.
It don't stop you. I know you'll be in the yard changing a starter, changing all. Yeah, you ain't going to stop.
No, Sergeant Miller hit it right on the head. Because, look, it all started. Look, I took this one day off today. And you know what? On that even though it's at vacation time, he's 100% correct. Lord willing, the health, you know, and the sun rises tomorrow. Look, tomorrow I'll be back on it on that do list. You know, even though I'm not at work, I'll be working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it don't stop. Know?
There you go, Sarge. Sarge knows what that's about. Shoot. How was your Thanksgiving, Sarge?
It was good. Went to my mom, had a big feast.
Ooh.
See all my people, you know. My brother, my nephew, you know.
Uh-huh. How's that brother doing with the family? Enjoying that new CDL?
Yeah, he's doing good. He got him a shuttle run. Ooh, and nice. He was like, man, I should have been got my CDL. I should have been listening to you. I said, you just make that pain a little bit easier, you know.
Just go. A little bit.
But yeah, you don't miss that warehouse being on that forklift at all.
Hmm.
So
now he's got a peace of mind out there on that road, huh?
Yeah, you just gotta fight that sleep now, you know. You gotta pattern yourself, get you at least six hours sleep.
Oh yeah. And, so he runs overnight, huh?
Yeah, he go to Shreveport and back.
Oh,
a Hammond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he got a stop in Hammond too?
Well, I think it switches every week. 1 week he'll go to Shreveport, 1 week he'll go to Hammond.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he don't have to do that running route. He don't have to run that Reinhardt route.
No, he's running the shuttle.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like he was like, yeah, that. Dropping them groceries, bust his ass. He was like, I'm getting too old for that. I said, Ooh. Yeah.
Look, he kind of was feeling it. I mean, he was getting a taste of it in that warehouse. I got to say, though, he was getting a taste of what we go through, because I saw him humping in that warehouse, man. Your brother used to rock and roll.
Yeah, he used to get it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was proud of him, man. He definitely deserved that CDL, and I'm so happy that, you know, he just shuttles what he does, those little bobtail. I mean, those little the short trailers. I can't even think. It just skipped my mind.
He do the vans, 53 footers.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, and he getting training on the doubles.
Mm.
He said he ain't ready for them doubles yet. But I told him, I said, you know, you just gotta get it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Get your feet wet.
Yeah, little pup trailers. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah,
Yeah, pup trailers. Yeah, yeah, but it ain't nothing, bro.
Nah, I told him. I said that's part of the game. You know, you just you make yourself an asset. You know.
Yes. Yes. And the pup trailers are nothing. It's not a big deal because you were thinking that just because that second trailer's back there, when you go to turn into a driveway, you always turn kind of wide anyway, having a drive van. And, you know, that second trailer is going to follow where that first trailer goes. So it ain't like you got to do anything out of the norm.
You know? You just got to remember easy in, easy out.
There you go. Yeah. And just that wind, we know when it's heavy wind, that's the only thing that gets, even with a dry van, hell, we play hard time with that wind, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear the song that you you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. The family came together, and what I did was I waited till the next day I got off, boy, and I even started like I had got because I was after working all year long, I waited into late evening Saturday to get up and start moving, and I said, well, even though I kind of feel like I want to go lay back down, I just started cranking it up. That was it. That's all she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I started going down. Huh? Go ahead.
It ain't gonna get done unless you put your hands to it. You know?
Boy, did I ever. Boy, I started slamming that food back, boy. Look, I started putting all that together. And boy, I gotta tell you, man, it came together good too, boy. Woo, woo.
And I know your son enjoyed that. That's his first Thanksgiving since being back, right?
Yeah, he finally sat down and ate with us, but he's Mr. Keto, and he's not used to all of that sweetness of the sweet potato casserole and stuff like that and cheesecake. You know, he tries to stay away from sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that kind of hurt his gut a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Eating all that food he's not used to, because he's more like, you know, his health big time with the salad and, you know, all of that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and I commend him for it, you know. So he just wanted to try one time, you know, eat him with us and get some ham in him, because we did the ham for Thanksgiving this year, and we're going to do the turkey for Christmas, you know.
Yeah,
that's the way we're going to do it. Try to switch it up a little bit. And, boy, I'm glad we did. Oh, whoa. Man, that was good. I just got finished eating the plate myself. So,
that old dressing, huh?
Uh-huh.
That old famous cornbread dressing, huh?
Ooh, boy, you know I slammed back on that, boy. Ooh, woo. Man, I put that together, boy. Look, that's one of my mama's recipes there. And boy, once I learned that was a wrap, you know? So, I was just looking up, I think it was right here. I have something here that I wanted to, like, kind of have, like, an opener that over the weekend, this guy wrote this book. And it's one I wouldn't mind ordering off Amazon or something. This guy, Douglas Rushkoff. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
No, but, I probably heard of the book.
Yeah, it's called Coercion. And the undertitle is Why We Listen to What They Say. They is in quotation marks.
Okay, so you're dealing with propaganda.
Yeah, because what he was trying to do was, to awaken the people, if you will, to what happens is, like, if you had to think of the Taylor Swift halftime show at the Super Bowl, you know, everything, this blown out thing, everything's got to be, this blown out thing, the iPhone 15, you know, all the newest stuff, everything that's got to be blown up, you know, it's got to be what they say is the best thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what they try to do. That they try to coerce us, and here's a statement that he had made he said, and I think shout out to Why Not, and Why Not has stated one time, you know, that why is it that they have to create a world of scarcity when it should be a world of abundance? He had made that statement, this book, you know, and Why Not was right, you know, that it should there should be abundance for all. You know, and that's the way that we should all be thinking that, you know, we go back, it all goes back to like American Pickers. When we watch that show, you know, they had 20 buildings full of stuff to the rafters, you know, but it's that's what people don't grasp a hold of. You know, they don't grasp a hold of it. It's all about the, you know, the biggest thing. They got to have the most thing, the super yacht, driving a yacht in a super yacht, and all the stuff that's the biggest thing, the greatest thing, the blowout show at the Super Bowl, you know, all of these things that they coerce people into believing that, you know, they have to have the biggest and baddest and, you know, the greatest thing of all and all of this other stuff. And yet you look at people like Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, her daughter, all these people in the past and went on. You know, and people are being coerced day after day after day into all of these beliefs of their own system of the Grandma Pelosi and believing that, you know, we know what's best for everything type of mentality, you know. But I also had something here that I wanted to read. It was that from the United Nations. Excerpt from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's like a little short, you know, two paragraph thing, right?
And that was done under Obama administration. I don't know if you remember when they had like all of the cultures meeting in one spot. I think it was overseas somewhere. But it's a Declaration of Human Rights, from the they start pushing that LGBTQ transgender thing. And it's trying to, you know what I'm saying? They're trying to subvert us from having human rights and understanding that in this country, they diverted to civil rights instead of human rights. You know, it's a big different ball game.
You care to elaborate a little bit more on one versus the other?
Well, civil rights here you fall into the 14th Amendment. And that's only limited. That's why they was pushing Martin Luther King, marching, protests. That's why they was pushing that. Because with human rights, that you're going to ancient. You're going to ancient laws. You know, as a human being with a belly button. Well, you're born with those, they call them inalienable rights.
There you go.
And I noticed traveling overseas, they got human rights lawyers. And I was like, wow. Like in like Malta, island of Malta, the cops don't carry guns or batons, and not you don't ever hear about what we call police brutality, because the citizenry there, that their knowledge is up on human rights, so they actually know how to sue if they're wrongfully done. But over here, we're taught, oh, it's racism.
Yeah.
When in reality is, you don't understand the system. Once you understand the system, then you can make a better judgment call, trying to get like what they call revenge or justice.
Like having standing.
There you go, standing. Standing got a lot to do with it too. And Roman civil law. That's what civil rights falls under, Roman civil law, peasantry.
Yes. That makes perfect sense. So it says, under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the General Assembly proclaims the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations, to the end that every individual in every organ of society, keeping this declaration constant in mind, shall strive by teaching and education to promote respect for these rights and freedoms. Article 7 says all are equal before the law. All are equal before the law and are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. All are entitled to equal protection against any discrimination and violation of this declaration and against any incitement to such discrimination. Article 12 says, no one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondence. Where to kind of cut off? It says something N-O something. Notice to attack upon his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attacks. but they seem like when we go to a court or something like that, it seemed like they want to attack us or something. Article 13 says everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. Article 17 says everyone has the right to own property along as well as in association with others. That's dash one and dash two says no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his property. That's from Article 17. Article 20 says, dash one, everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association, which they nowadays we're hearing that they want to cut us out of this peaceful assembly. You know, like they tried to be. You see, that's where the Supreme Court ought to step in when it comes to a peaceful assembly. But we saw the Palestinian movement up there in D.C., that these people were having a peaceful assembly, and we actually had some folks from mainstream was actually speaking out, which surprised the hell out of me, you know, that they were saying that as long as these people are peacefully assembling, that they should have all the right to do so, because they feel like that, you know, this quorum that's going on with, you know, the Israel and Palestinian thing, that they should be allowed a peaceful movement, because, you know, they're speaking out and the government should hear them, you know, cease fire, you know, that's what it's about.
Stop throwing bombs in my backyard, man. I ain't do nothing.
There you go. It says Article 23-1 says everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to protection against unemployment. Damn, they ought to really take that in consideration, and to protection against unemployment. Now, my theory is, and the way I've always believed, that there should be some kind of amendment adopted and put into law that any company, because you know what? It's like they want to it's almost like they want to, what would you say, arbitrarily try to make it where they try to make it a case against you whenever you get laid off or fired from a job, which you feel that you might have. You can appeal, you know, because they want to deny your unemployment. But then you got to go through the appeal. And then they may say that we just felt that, you know, that it was not in the behalf of you being able to receive unemployment. Like, so let me kick you out to the freaking cold winds and good luck with your life. You know, there should be nothing like of the such. You know, this is freaking United States of freaking America. You know, there should be some kind of damn law put in for unemployment situation that in any case that you become unemployed, because most countries probably do that for their people. You know, they don't just kick them out freaking into unemployment, being underemployed. You know, you are a working citizen, you know, being a productive citizen of society. They don't have a damn right to do that. And it should be held up in the court of law. You know, that you have an inalienable right to, that if, one, you have a right to work, you know, and then if they feel like that, you know, and let's say no fault of your own or whatever the hell, you know, they shouldn't be trying to tell you, you need to find 5 job contacts and, you know, per week. And there you are, got to, you know, spend all this money on gas. And you're not even receiving unemployment, you know. Mm-hmm. But you trying to get unemployment and they're contesting your unemployment so that there is, you know, you don't even have money to freaking to try to do these things and get unemployment, and they want to fight against it, you know? Mm-hmm. So they should think about that when should be a law put in place when you should – go ahead.
Yeah, all you got to do is just cross the border illegally into the United States and – they'll take care of you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, become an alien citizen. Hell, we already are alien to this country. They try to call us a citizen, right?
Oh, yeah. You're a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, person of interest. Yeah, exactly. So there you go. I mean, if we're considered as a citizen, which why not raises a couple of times, you know, have raised a couple of times that, you know, we're a citizen. So if they consider us a citizen, then we should have every right to unemployment. The moment that I can understand or get the knowledge of week of wait, and I'm okay with that. But doggone it, that second week, that unemployment needs to come. And there should be a law in place to protect us as a citizen. Huh? It said Australia is a signatory to the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and therefore I am entitled to be treated in accordance with the above. That's what that says. So, you see, and I think what it is maybe what they need to do is they need to send a copy of these Universal Declaration of Human Rights to the U.S. government and governments, you know, all even to England, even they in the parliament and all of that, they all need to get a copy, you know, and realize what the inalienable rights really are. So if you're going to consider us a people of interest or citizens of our own damn indigenous natives to this land, and you calling us out under the Slavery Act, what you treat us like, right? Because they're already stealing our tax dollars. So, you know, when it comes time to being unemployed, they ought to consider giving us unemployment with no arguments, you know? No trying to come again.
You're 14 billion to Ukraine and another 14 billion to Israel. And you stick us the middle finger. Hey, player.
Yeah. Yeah, what's up with that? So I've got to give us the middle finger, huh?
Yeah.
What's up with that? Man, they need to come correct.
A lot of people. That alone woke up a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the one. No, I said that alone woke up a lot of people, especially the ones that voted for Biden. Just for the student loan, you know, the student loan repayment. And now they're saying, wait a minute, man, I still got my student loan. I thought y'all was gonna get rid of that.
Yeah.
Now they're saying, you can't trust everything that opened his mouth, you know?
Yeah. So, I want to give a shout out to Bruce and Jimmy Jean and them for holding the show, because I didn't make it on Thursday night. Right when I found out that they was doing that show, I was actually cutting my hair, And I happened to, you know, chime in a little bit and listen to a little bit of the show. I didn't catch a lot of it, though, because I was so busy, you know, fooling with my hair and stuff. So, you know, I just wanted to give a shout out to Bruce and them for holding down, you know, the Two Feathers show. I don't know if they gave me a shout out, if it was a live or rebroadcast, or I know they were talking about hair or something. I just caught the first glimpse of the show, and then I just went back to doing my hair. So, you know, I'm just glad that they picked it up, or however they rebroadcasted it or whatever. So, you know, shout out to the management if it was a rebroadcast, and shout out to Bruce and him if it was a live show, you know, Jimmy Jean. So,
they got a good show on Friday night. They got a real good show. Very entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People want to go check them out. They right before, I think our friend Jerbear is taking a little break right now, but it was right before his show. But what I wanted to bring on that Thursday night, you know, being that it was a Thanksgiving show, I wanted to bring something, you know, to the people's attention that, you know, gives two cares about, you know, someone else other than ourselves. It talks about, for Native peoples, Thanksgiving isn't a celebration. It's not a celebration. It's a national day of mourning. So they have this grandfather. His name is Keisha James. He's carrying a box. It shows a picture of him carrying a box. And in the box are the Wampanoag human remains he and other National Day of Mourning protesters liberated from the Pilgrim Museum in 1974, you know? And it said this article is like more than 3 years old. It says this segment was rebroadcasted on November the 25th of 2021. And they made it like into an audio. And it says this year marks the the 400th anniversary of pilgrims arriving at what's known as Plymouth, Massachusetts. Right. It says. So, you know, if you want to. It says the so-called first Thanksgiving has been celebrated and taught to school children as the origin story of what would later become the United States. But many Native Americans say Thanksgiving Day is a reminder of the slaughter of millions of indigenous people and the theft of their lands by outsiders. The United American Indians of New England declared Thanksgiving a national day of mourning 50 years ago. In 1970, the descendants of the pilgrims wanted to hold a banquet to celebrate the anniversary of the Mayflower landed in Plymouth and asked a Wampanoag, Wampanoag, Panag, a Wampanoag man named Wamsuda Frank James, to make a speech, says his granddaughter, Keisha James. The banquet organizers invited Wamsuda Frank James to speak on one strict condition. He needed, listen to this, because I read a little bit of this, and this is what kind of made me want to also read this here. Now, check this out. The banquet organizers invited Wamsuda Frank James to speak on one strict condition. There's a strict condition involved, people. Listen to this. He needed to provide a copy of the speech in advance. Okay? And it's going to tell you why they wanted him to provide a copy in advance. Okay? Stay with me. It says, under the guise of editing for spelling and grammar, their true motivation was to check the content, Keisha James says. And her grandfather's speech is written in blue here, and I just clicked on it. The suppressed speech of a WEM suitor, Frank B. James Winnipanog. All right, and we could go to that in a bit. But continuing on with this article, it says, they quote, they told him that he absolutely, under no circumstances, could give the speech that he was planning on giving, and that they offered to write him a different speech. How you love that, sir? We gonna tell you what to say, she says. You know? And I quote also that they were quite angry about the speech he wrote because it told the truth about Thanksgiving, unquote. And they show you a statue here. It says Wham Suda Frank James by the statue of Massasoit. That's Massasoit, Massasoit, in Plymouth, Massachusetts, on a national day of mourning in the 1970s. Okay? Webb Sisuda Frank James refused to give the edited speech. He didn't want to give the edited speech, his granddaughter said. Instead, he and a group of supporters met atop Coles Hill in Plymouth on November the 27th of 1970 to commemorate the first National Day of Mourning. That was on November the 27th of 1970. While millions of fellow Americans carved turkeys to celebrate Thanksgiving, 21-year-old Keisha James attends the National Day of Mourning every year. Many indigenous people fast from sundown the night before to sundown the day of to remember the hardship and genocide their ancestors faced, she says. The National Day of Mourning also engenders indigenous unity with people from around the world speaking at the event. Thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic, this year's National Day of Mourning will look different. Keisha James and some others will still gather at Coles Hill at noon on Thanksgiving Day to make speeches, which will be live streamed. Most of this year's program is pre-recorded and will feature indigenous people from South America, Canada, and more. The speakers will highlight the different struggles indigenous people face around the world, such as the Mi'kmaq, that's M-I, and it's got a hyphen mark, K-M-A-Q, the Mi'kmaq tribes, disputes over lobster trapping in Canada, a member of the Navajo Nation, which COVID-19 has hit hardest of the tribal nations, will also speak, she says. All of the speeches will likely mention the pandemic because indigenous communities in the U.S. have been disproportionately impacted, she says. And disproportionately impacted is in blue as well. This Thanksgiving, Keisha James, also non-native people to educate themselves and their families on the real history of the holiday. Take time to learn the tribe whose land you're on, which is in blue, okay? And it says, then look into the tribe's struggles and donate to help, she says. Quote, try to divorce your Thanksgiving celebrations from the Thanksgiving mythology, unquote, she says. So, quote, she says, so no more pilgrims and Indians, no more teaching your children about the first Thanksgiving as we learn it in public schools where it was a friendly meal, unquote. Wow. And don't only think about indigenous people on Thanksgiving, she says. As many Americans start to wake up to the realities of Thanksgiving story, some people are receptive to learning the truth about the holiday and accept that what they learn in school is a lie, she says. But a significant amount of people accuse indigenous people of trying to, quote unquote, ruin the holiday and disrupt family celebrations, she says. Keisha James says she doesn't object to family gathering to eat a meal together, but rather the false mythology surrounding the day. Quote, we're essentially extending our hand to the people and saying, here's the truth. If you want to learn the truth and accept the truth, come with us, unquote, she says. Quote, and unfortunately, some people don't want to take our hand because they're committed to dying on the wrong side of history. Wow, unquote. Revisiting her grandfather's rejected speech, 5 decades later, Keisha James is reminded that Native Americans are fighting the same battles today. Quote, part of it gives me hope because this is a visionary speech. It's envisioning a better America, a better world for Native Americans, unquote, she says. But, quote, but at the same time, my grandfather's vision had still not come true 50 years after the speech. And so it just reminds me that we have a lot of work to do and we still have a long way to go for Native Americans to reclaim our proper place in the country, unquote. An excerpt from Wamsutta Frank James' speech. Quote, today we must work towards a more humane America, a more Indian America, where men and nature once again are important, where the Indian values of honor, truth, and brotherhood prevail. You, the white man, are celebrating an anniversary. We, the Wampanoags, Noags, however you want to say it, will help you celebrate in the concept of a new beginning. It was the beginning of a new life for the pilgrims. Now, 350 years later, it is the beginning of a new determination for the original American, the American Indian. There are some factors concerning the Wampanoags and other Indians across this vast nation. We now have 350 years of experience living among the white man. We can now speak his language. We can now think as the white man thinks. We can now compete with them for the top jobs. We're being heard. We are now being listened to. The important point is that along with the necessities of everyday living, we still have the spirit. We still have the unique culture. We still have the will. And most important of all, the determination to remain as Indians. We are determined in our presence here this evening is living testimony that this is the only beginning of the American Indian, particularly the Wampanoag, to regain the position in this country that is rightfully ours. How you like that? And we could go back to the top. How you like, Sarge, you want to comment on any of this?
Well, I mean, yeah, they're just bringing up a history that's not taught.
Ooh.
You know, yeah, the Wampanoag, that's the Iroquois, Confederacy at that time period. But they brought up a good point. Whatever land you're in, you should know the history of the indigenous aboriginals in that area, you know?
Yeah, and buddy.
We in Louisiana, so you have a mixture of the Creek, Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Shada, the Calcasieu, you got the Appaloosa.
Yep.
You got so many different tribes, the Houma.
The Houma Nation tribe.
Yeah.
And that's, I just had made contact a little while back with a cousin of mine. And she was in touch with my mom's brother and on her dad's side, right? And he come to tell her, and she shared it with me, that we are from the Houma Nation tribe. And I didn't know that. And I was like, wow. Because, See, my mama's daddy was a real dark complected individual, as well as my mom. And, you know, I think they had a lot of that red blood in them. You know, you can tell, even though they were French, you know, he had French as well. So I think some of his ancestry was a lot of Indian. And that's what I was told. So it just blows me away. And that's, I guess that's why, you know, I was watching an episode of The Waltons, if you all are familiar with The Waltons. And they had an Indian that was on one of their programs. And he was trying to tell them that, you know, that his ancestry was inside of the family, the Walton family's barn. Inside the barn was where it was old Indian burial ground. And the Waltons didn't want to believe him. And the grandpa, which was Mr. Walton's daddy, went and dug up the ground because he couldn't sleep. He had to find out if it was true. And he actually found a human skull down in the hole that he was digging. And man, that tripped me out, man. That old man, the Indian man, he went to that property. He was over 100 and something years old. I think he was 102, 103 years old. And he wound up dying on the show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's just a show, but I mean, you know, it's just still, you have to have great respect. We know and we hear of the Trail of Tears, Sergeant Miller.
Oh, yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. First biological weapon used that I can pinpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Smallpox on blankets.
Wait, say that again?
Smallpox used on the blankets. Mm. That was a biological weapon.
Damn. Isn't that something? Boy, I tell you what, man. That ever since way back then, Sarge, you know what I mean? You know, a movement of an action that, I had heard that a while, way back. You know, I think y'all had mentioned that one time before, excuse me, that, you know, they used that in an action to diminish the Nation tribe, you know? And how dirty. I mean, it makes you feel, makes you feel not proud of your country, your countrymen, you know, of what they've done because they so felt threatened. You know, we go back to the Pilgrim days and stuff, and oh, we need to kill the Indian nations, you know, as much as possible because they're starting to outnumber them. And it wouldn't have been for them, you know, feeding the white man of the, you know, the what was that they got from the corn, the meal, what they called it, you know, grits. I think that's where we got the grits from. You know, that they fed the white man and the white man actually survived. And then when he got his energy and strength, the Indians are outnumbered. I think we need to take them out. You know?
The land grab.
Huh?
The land grab. They got a lot of stories, man. You just gotta really read because you see, like, I use William Penn, who Pennsylvania is named after, of how the natives and the Portuguese, the Irish at that time, the English got along. They actually got along with each other.
Mm.
And then corporation come through and messed that whole deal up, you know, when it's corporatized.
Yeah.
Government structure, you know, it messes up that purity you find with each other, learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many stories. There's even stories of some chiefs who actually signed the treaties without talking to the people. And then the people end up cutting the chief head off 2 weeks later when they found out what he done. So it's, you know, it's good and bad in both aspects.
Yeah. But it was really bad for the Nation tribe. And Maize is what I was thinking of, where they got maize. You know, they fed to the white man. And I heard it all come from corn.
And yeah, then, but they taught them how to cultivate the land, fall and autumn, how to plant, what furs to use to keep you warm.
Yeah.
Certain woods to use.
See that? I mean, there was, you know, these evil tribes also, you know, when they saw, like, smoke, you know, it played into, that was a big deal back in the Indian days if you didn't want to, you know, because the Indians, they had some Indian tribes out there that were just evil. And, boy, mm-hmm. if they saw smoke clouds, they took that as, like, a, you know, who's moving in on our nation, you know? So, you know, a lot of even white men knew, you know, about burning fires in the daytime, you know? If they were moving across the prairies or whatever, they would come to note and get educated on that anytime they move across the prairie that they didn't make fire during the day or whatever that could be discovered from the smoke, you know, of these evil tribes. But they also had these peaceful tribes, you know, that didn't mean harm. They just wanted to live upon the land in which, you know, those were the people that, you know, in a lot of ways that people could have took a lot of knowledge and learned from.
Mm-hmm.
But just like that Indian girl was saying that, you know, that what's come about is the Indians have come to, you know, find themselves to be educated and speak the language of the white man, you know, but they also haven't forgot their history of the Trail of Tears, of where many millions of Indians were slaughtered,
mm-hmm.
you know? Oh, yeah, dude, and that's why, you know, I have to give, you know, credit where credit's due, like when they do respect the lands, you know, of the Indians, but it didn't seem like that whenever they turned that lake or whatever, that waterway over there, up the country, when they turned that big lake by the Indian reservation mustard yellow, you remember they released something into the water?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
The damage in the damn water. And you see, Native American Indian is living off the land and always showed homage to the, you know, the respecting of land, you know, of Mother Earth, as they call it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Always.
A lot of old tradition was the copper coins. Or anything copper, you would put it in a pond or a lake or a river. And that became the tradition of like the wishing well. You know, you throw the penny behind you into some water and you make a wish.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that tradition came from.
Okay.
They would put the copper in the water and it's mm-hmm. antibacterial, purifies the water.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that's where that came from. Wow. That's awesome. But, you know, when it comes time for, you know, respecting, like, the land, you know, the Indians, you got to give it to them. Like, when they killed buffalo, they only killed for what they needed for the winter hides. Like, when the hides would wear out, they would make, you know, these coats or whatever. To keep warm, and then they would only kill the amount of meat they needed, you know, to feed their families through the winter. And they would leave the rest alone. They wasn't like the white man. The white man was after the fur for the hide, you know, and to make it, because it was all about profit. You know, as you learn in Dances with Wolves, they loaded their wagons down, leaving buffalo meat in the valleys. All across the freaking valley, the meat for the meat to rot, you know? And I was like, you know, it just goes to show you the different ways of Indian versus white man. When they've always meant for, you know, and now they got some Indians now making, you know, for profit. You know, they're building casinos and all that, and supposed to be a betterment for the Indian nations. And then they really don't realize that they do harm until the Indian nations, when they don't bring the funding back to the Indian nations neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's only for their own gain, you know. So they don't realize that, you know, it's all for their own gain, and it's not good. You know, when you don't spend that that money back into the nations of the you know, in, they call it into the Indian reservation, you know. So they need to realize that, hey, you know, that they're actually hurting the Indian nations whenever they want to build these things. Now, I could see maybe having meetings like they used to do, and finding out, you know, where the funding or how the funding, how do they feel about, you know, building something that would support the Indian nations, you know, financially, you know, where they could continue to make a continuing money. You know, that would support the end of the monies get referred back to the Indian nations, where they keep benefiting if they're being funded by the U.S. government. You know, they're getting these type of grants or what have you, you know. So that's a big importance. So they should show the Indian nations of the people who, or over that, you know, they should show a respect instead of wanting to build casinos where it's taking the people of the Indian nations, where they feel like they need to go and relieve stress to go and gamble. You know, they should be trying to build something that's beneficial to the Indian nation, you know, where I'm not saying they don't have people that come from miles around that may come into the casinos or whatever, but really and truthfully, if you want to have a healthy Indian nation, just like us today here in our country, you know, man, all of this damn gambling and, you know, all this stuff, man, it's just like, hell, we don't even have to think about gambling. Hell, they take the money and gamble it over in Ukraine and freaking over there in the Gaza Strip and spending it on billions of dollars of weapons. You know what I'm saying, son?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that hour went fast. When you're listening to the Cognitive Reality Show with Two Feathers and Sergeant Miller, y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic marsal veins. so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal Lotus O deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Back, everybody. You listen to Cognitive Reality Show with me, Two Feathers, and Sergeant Miller in the house. If you like what you've been listening to, head on over to our website, have a look around, become a supporter of this wonderful, great station here at Revolution Radio. Let you know that if you're a business owner, we're doing a fundraiser for $25 a month. You can find your company name right here on our website. So, if you want to do that, we have a archives. It's free right now. Right now, all because of you make this possible, the listener. And we're 12 years going on 13, and we are greatly appreciated. It's all because of you, that you keep making this this thing keep going around, you know, and we're about to hit that 13-year mark. So, yeah, we have a Matrix chat room. If you want to get signed up to that Matrix, shout out to the people in Matrix tonight. If you happen to be listening, and yeah, we're just greatly appreciative of that you all are here. And you can also become a patron if you want to give every month. It's all good. You want to be a one-time donor. You can also give through snail mail, you know. It'll get to us slow, but it'll get here, you know. Miss Terry Ackerman, a.k.a. Lady Horse. You can find her right there on that website, www.revolution.radio. FreedomSlips.net, FreedomSlips.org. Come check us out. You'll be glad that you did. You know, when you hear your family. And we just like to welcome you back. And we were talking about the Indian nation that, you know, that we're all been celebrating Thanksgiving. And what's been occurring is, you know, for us, it's all a celebration. For them, it's a mourning. You know, and like we were speaking before the break, that we think about the Trail of Tears, you know, and a lot of ways that, you know, a lot of ways that even our own country, we continue to suffer. And, you know, because we the respect that we don't give to the First Nations tribe and, you know, people that are indigenous native to this land. Even ourselves, like Sergeant Miller and myself, you know, they call us people of interest, you know, we're terrorists of our land. They call us, you know, citizens, you know, they give us all these dirty names, you know, that we don't even rightfully deserve when you're born. Just like, you know, I feel for the people of Mexico that found themselves, you know, coming across the border. And it's like, you know, and these people are born and raised on that land, you know, that they had to run from their own homeland to come here to try to find some type of, you know, value in life, to try to build some kind of, you know, life for them and their families, you know, because there's no, you know, they're not, their country is not a hospitality country, you know, that they're not building a country for their people to be able to stay where they were born and raised, you know, and now their children are being born and was maybe there only a few years and, but actually born there. And they find themselves having to run to the borders of America when it shouldn't have never been. You know, that's what I'm saying. That we're not on an up and up. It's like we're feeding into the cartel of ways. And because, you know, if we're going to fight something, let's fight for the right kind of thing so that these people could have stayed on their land that they were born unto. You know, that people don't even give thought to that. You know, that they're sitting here, we're so caught up in our own ways and, you know, how my portfolio looks instead of the actions of the way that our system of things and our government and our policy making that these people do that so, you know, suppresses a people, hell, even our own people of our own lands, you know. And then we got people that find themselves having to run from their indigenous born land, the nation, that, you know, they feel like that this is the only way. And then we come to find out that they're being taken care of once they hit the, you know, the borders of this land. They're given this and that and the other. And it's just like, well, wait a minute. You know, the people of this country feels like what just happened? You know, did you just mind rape me or did I get mind raped? You know, what the hell just happened? You know, we've been here all this time, and it's just like, you know, you say we never had tax dollars to fix infrastructure or, you know, cut taxes for our people here to where our people can empower themselves financially, you know, through lower gas prices, lower food prices, whatever, that we had to solely inflate prices in every kind of way and also charges over 75 taxes. On top of what we already pay, you know, of high inflation, you know, and it's just like, you know, where's the justice in the land, you know? And then you send over a people that's running from their own land that we can't even give two whims about going and finding out where's the corruption in between the miscommunication of America and Mexico. That these people have to run from their own land, their own territory, where they were born and raised, of the indigenous land that they were born unto. So we come back to the suppressed speech. Remember I was telling you of Wamsutta, Frank B. James Winneponog. You know, Frank B. James, of they wanted to rewrite his speech. Oh, they were saying they wanted to check it for spelling, huh? They wanted to check it for spelling and, you know, some kind of correctness that they wanted him to say and rewrite what they wanted him to say. But it says, to have been delivered at Plymouth, Massachusetts, 1970. So it says about the document. Remember, they wanted to suppress his original letter that he wanted to present, and they wanted to for him to rewrite the letter in the way that they wanted him to write, you know, to rewrite and say it the way that they wanted him to say it, the white man, you know. So it says about the document. It says 350 years after the Pilgrims begin their invasions of the land of the Winneponog, their quote-unquote American descendants planned an anniversary celebration, still clinging to the white schoolbook myth of friendly relations between their forefathers and the Winneponog, Noag, or however you want to say, I'm going to say Ponog, It just makes it shorter. The forefathers in the Winnipeg, the anniversary planners, thought it would be nice to have an Indian make an appreciative and complimentary speech at their state dinner. Okay? At state, S-T-A-T-E, state dinner. Frank James was asked to speak at the celebration. He accepted. The planners, however, asked to see his speech in advance of the occasion. And it turned out that Frank James's views, based on history rather than mythology, like Sergeant Miller was speaking about, were not what the Pilgrims' descendants wanted to hear. Frank James refused to deliver a speech written by a public relations person. You see how they were doing that? They were switching it all up, Sergeant Miller.
Uh-huh.
They wanted to get a qualified public relations person to come in and rewrite it. So Frank James did not speak at the anniversary celebration. There you go, white man. He was telling you. So he didn't even go and speak. So if he had spoken, this is what he would have said. I speak to you as a man, a Winnipeg man. I am a proud man, proud of my ancestry, my accomplishments, won by a strict parental direction. Quote, you must succeed. Your face is a different color in this small Cape Cod community, unquote. I am a product of poverty and discrimination from these two social and economic diseases. I and my brothers and sisters have painfully overcome, and to some extent, we have earned the respect of our community. We are Indians first, but we are termed quote-unquote good citizens. Sometimes we are arrogant, but only because society has pressured us to be so. It is with mixed emotion that I stand here to share my thoughts. This is a time of celebration for you, celebrating an anniversary of a beginning for the white man in America, a time of looking back, of reflection. It is with a heavy heart that I look back upon what happened to my people. Even before the Pilgrims landed, it was common practice for explorers to capture Indians, take them to Europe, and sell them as slaves for 220 shillings apiece. The Pilgrims had hardly explored the shores of Cape Cod for 4 days before they had robbed the graves of my ancestors and stolen their corn and beans. Mort's relation describes a searching party of 16 men. Mort goes on to say that this party took as much as the Indians' winter provisions as they were able to carry. Damn. So the Massasoit, the great Sekum of the Winnipeg, knew these facts, yet he and his people welcomed and befriended the settlers of the Plymouth Plantation. Perhaps he did this because his tribe had been depleted by an epidemic, or his knowledge of the harsh oncoming winter was the reason for his peaceful acceptance of these acts. This action by Massasoit was perhaps our biggest mistake. We, the Winnipeg, welcome you, the white man, with open arms, little knowing that it was the beginning of the end, that before 50 years were to pass, the Winnipeg would no longer be a free people. What happened in those short 50 years? What has happened in the last 300 years? History gives us facts, and there were atrocities. There were broken promises. And then right there, Sergeant, there were broken promises. You know, when, you know, as you know, as well as I know, that white man probably made promises unto the Indian because it was all for the gain of the white man. You know, that they gave them promises that they broke. You know what I'm saying? And most of these centered around land ownership. Among ourselves, we understood that there were boundaries. But never before had we had to deal with fences and stone walls. Because you remember the Indians were a free people, right? So hang on. Let's see. But never before we had to deal with fences and stone walls. But the white man had a need to prove his worth by the amount of land that he owned. Only 10 years later, when the Puritans came, they treated the Winnipeg with even less kindness in converting the souls of the so-called, quote-unquote, savages. Because if you remember, they called them savages in a lot of ways because they used to scout the white man, you know. But not all Indians were savages. There was peaceful Indians, you know. It's only when you came with trying to harm them and their families, of course. I mean, how would you, what would you be called? Hell, what is the white man called today that even though he's still acting the way he's doing in the wake of war, still having war? And it's like we haven't moved away from war. You know, what the hell you call us today if we're not savages? If you're not doing the will of the people, then you're not doing, you're doing some other action and activity up on people. Hell, couldn't you call white man savages today? If you're spending billions of dollars on something that we shouldn't even be entangled in, and, you know, we got a poor infrastructure. We got people that are on fixed income and can't even barely rub two nickels together to make a dollar, you know. And yet you call these people savages. But, you know, you have to look into that and, you know, look at the bad Indians, because they did have bad tribes out there that, you know, the Mayans, you know, you go back to the Mayans. They had different families, tribes of Mayans that live among each other that might have been outside of each other's camp. But then when some Mayans that were evil in their ways, you think about that Mayan movie we watched that Mel Gibson made, Sergeant Miller.
Apocalypto.
Apocalypto. When they thought that that one tribe of people were getting too large, they went over there and tried to overtake them. You know, and kill off their families, just shorten up their families. They killed a good deal of their families off, you know. And that's the same thing as the Indians. You know, they had these savages that went out and felt like their tribe was the bigger and better tribe. Well, you had these other Indians that were the good Indians, the peaceful Indians. They were like, you know, they had to defend themselves, you know. So... and then you had white man that, you know, I go back to in the time of Dances with Wolves. They showed that one incident where the Indians come into that family when that girl, she was, you know, stands with a fist when she was a little girl. They went into her family and all they was asking for was something to eat. They wasn't meaning, and the white man was saying, get out of here, you know, get away from my home and all this stuff. And they were being peaceful. So they was just asking for something to eat. If they would have gave it 0.2 seconds, they could have thought that, you know, all they're asking for is something to eat. You know, they could have said, let us sit down together and let's share a meal together. Hell, but hell, even America today, they act like they can't sit down together, that we got to bring out the next big thing, your big guns. And, you know, Joe Biden said you got to have F-15s to come against us. You know, and all this kind of stuff. You see? Huh?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Well, I look at it like this, you know, mistakes was made on both sides. Mm-hmm. And we the product of that these days, you know, modern times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to learn from history so we don't make them same mistakes.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. And obviously we haven't learned a damn thing. It's just like we keep in agitating war.
Yep.
And you know, people wanna, you know, listen to that damn mainstream raping machine, you know, and thinking that you know, Putin's bad. You know? But we're not even thinking about that he was willing to, remember when he went into the United Nations and he said it fell on deaf ears. You know? And that was way back before the damn Ukrainian activity. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
See? See? That's what I'm saying. You see, history tells us. It tells us, man, that when we learn from history, we get the truality of the coercion that they continue to do up on us with the mind-raping media machine into believing that Putin bad. You see? So it says the Puritans were harsh to members of their own society. The Indian was pressed between stone slabs and hanged. They were pressed between stone slabs and hanged as quickly as any other quote-unquote witch. And so down through the years, there is record after record of Indian lands taken and, in token, reservations set up for him upon which to live. The Indian, having been stripped of his power, could only stand by and watch while the white man took his land and used it for his personal gain. This, the Indian could not understand, for to him, land was survival. To farm, to hunt, okay, thank you, Pac. Yeah, I'll get with you on that. If you want to come on the show, Ms. Pack, just send me a little message, and you're more than welcome to join us if you like. It said the Indian could not understand, for to him, land was survival, because you remember, Sarge, that Indians even grew, I think they grew corn. You know, they grew probably lots of different vegetables and stuff like that, you know. It said, but land was survival to him, to them, to farm, to hunt, to be enjoyed, right? It was not to be abused, as it states. It says, we see incident after incident where the white man sought to tame the quote-unquote savage and convert him to the Christian ways of life. So the early pilgrim settlers led the Indian to believe that if, okay, thank you, ma'am. It said the early pilgrim settlers led the Indian to believe that if he did not behave, they would dig up the ground and unleash the great epidemic again. They would dig up the ground and unleash the great epidemic again. So obviously that tells us right there, Sergeant, that they created this epidemic that you speak about. Yeah, and that thing might have had something to do with that, you know, like you had stated, you know, with the blankets and all, right? That might have had a lot to do with that, like you were saying. They would open up the, dig up the ground and unleash the great epidemic again. Man, that's something, huh? The white man used the Indian's nautical skills and abilities. They let him be only a seaman, but never a captain. Time and time again, in the white man's society, we Indians have been termed, quote, low man on the totem pole. Has the Winnipeg really disappeared? This is still an aura of mystery. We know there was an epidemic that took many Indian lives. Some Winnipegs moved west and joined the Cherokee and Cheyenne. They were forced to move. Some even went north to Canada. Many Wampanoag put aside their Indian heritage and accepted the white man's way for their own survival. There are some Wampanoag who do not wish it known that they are Indian for social or economic reasons. What happened to those Wampanoags who chose to remain and live among the early settlers? What kind of existence did they live as, quote unquote, civilized people? True, living was not as complex as life today, but they dealt with the confusion and the change. Honestly, trust, concern, pride, and politics wove themselves in and out of the Wampanoag's daily living. Hence, he was termed crafty, cunning, rapacious, and dirty. Yeah, because they used to look at Indians as, as a dirty people back in the early days of the early 1800s, probably 1700s. They used to look at when Indians would go into like stores, or stuff like that, they would always look at them as dirty people. You know, that's a shame, man. It's just like, African community as well, the black man or the black woman, they still, they didn't show respect. And it's just like we should have had respect for each other no matter what tribe, creed, or color. You know? We should have respect for all human life, And that's just the way it should be. It said history wants us to believe that the Indian was a savage, illiterate, uncivilized animal. A history that was written by an organized, disciplined people to expose us as an unorganized and undisciplined entity. Two distinctly different cultures met. One thought they must control life. The other believed life was to be enjoyed. You see? That's monumental right there. One thought they must control life. Doesn't it seem like that when I mentioned Grandma Pelosi stating that they know what's best for everyone? Huh? So we got a one kind of people thought that they must control life. The other believed life was to be enjoyed. Oh, that must be a Two Feathers and Sergeant Miller world, huh? Or Revolution Radio world. Yeah, because we want you to be, we want you to be a free people, and you should be enjoying life, not having a controlled life where they think you should live in a 15-minute city. They're going to put you on this this chip, and, if you don't, your ESGs or whatever are not in line with Green New Deal and all this stuff, they feel like that they should be the ones that, Yuval Harari said, we're all hackable now and all this stuff, These people wouldn't even know what it is to probably go out into nature, talking about worrying about hacking somebody's life, Probably don't even have the slightest idea what it's like to sit around a campfire with a equal thinking minded people who are just wanting to be free in life and enjoy life and look out into the mountains and realize that, you know, the creator is the one in control of this whole scenario, you know, this whole entire world. And it's only until we come into the same likeness of mind as a human species on this planet, not thinking that one man is above another man just because he has a freaking certificate on the back of his wall that he is this great monumental king, you know, doesn't make a hill of beans when it comes to that freaking taking that you're grasping for that last bit of air that you're about to leave this planet. You know, that doesn't mean a hill of beans. You know, it's what you've done for your fellow man, you know, that makes life better for that individual, the human being, the other human beings that are solely on fixed income, low income, you know, they're worrying about having to, you know, are they going to make it to work next week? Sitting there already turning your billions into trillions, and yet you won't even shed out another freaking raise. You won't even give two thoughts about it. All you think about is, you know, me and mine, and my five generations going to have 25 generations of wealth. You know, and that's all that matters. And all, you know, nothing else matters. You know, but you're not getting the picture. Kemosabe? Oh, boy, that damn two fellas becoming real with it, boy. Don't let me come real with it because it gets too good. So you got either one thought that must control life and the other believe life was to be enjoyed, right? Because nature decreed it. There you go. Because nature decreed it. Let us remember, the Indian was just as human as the white man. There you go. You see, as the black man, as the Mexican man, you know, whatever. You know, we're all have this freedom that we're born with these inalienable rights and these freedoms we're born upon birth. You know, and that these people that they, you know, think that they need to control it, you know, but it doesn't need to be controlled. We need this releasement is what we need. You know, like this guy was saying. You know, coercion, you know, the way that these people try to coerce us into believing the next big thing, the Super Bowl 158, you know, this is the best thing on the planet, you know, it's the next big thing that, you know, what's the name? It's going to be Taylor Swift's going to do this big blowout. She's going to be wearing this Illuminati suit and all of this stuff, you know, it's like, this is the, you know, we got to have the biggest and best thing because they coerced us into being brainwashed, into believing that this is the best thing on the planet, you know, and we should go with it. It's the best. It's the best. Everything the best. And yet you're sitting here coughing up your freaking lungs and not realizing that, you know, you're about to leave the planet. And what have you done for your fellow man? You know, it's all because of me and my and the I. Because there's no we in the me and the my and the I. You see? Life is supposed to be enjoyed because the nature decreed it. Let us remember, the Indian was just as human as the white man. The Indian feels pain, gets hurt, and becomes defensive, has dreams, bears tragedy and failure, suffers from loneliness. Doesn't the white man suffer from loneliness? Huh? Yeah. Has dreams, bears tragedy and failure. So this is what they, you know, they would, even the black man or whatever, what have you, the Mexican man, you know, Caucasian, the Creole man, all, everyone. We're all having all of this. You know, we have dreams, we bear tragedy and failure. But you know what? The failure becomes less and the suffering becomes less is when we join hands and we gather and we help each other. This is where the life gets better, you see? And it's just like, man, it just takes all of this history of the Trail of Tears and all of these things that we've done and continue to do, You know, with look at the billions of dollars are being spent into weaponry. And then, you know, even people like Xi Jinping over there in China, you know, and all of these activities of these type of governments, Marxist, communist government, you know, feeling like they're some kind of gods or something and don't realize that their next step is the deathbed, you know? And it's just like that, you know, they're humans just like we are. Everyone's human. That's, you know, it's the human race. You know, it's not about all of this junk that, you know, we could find ourselves caught up in the mess and all this coercion. The Indian feels pain, gets hurt, and becomes defensive, has dreams, bears tragedy and failure, suffers from loneliness. You wouldn't believe how many people out there in the world suffer just loneliness. I've heard of people dying of broken hearts and loneliness and, you know, people just, man, they feel alone. They don't feel like they have anyone, not even a friend to talk to. That's the one thing that, you know, that has me sound out. And, you know, because I hate to see people suffer from loneliness. And what makes me, you know, as many friends or many people that I could come encounter with, you know, that makes me, you know, let them know that, you know, Two Feathers wants to be there. You know, if they make me part of their lives, hell, I'll be part of their lives, you know, and we'll do this thing together. We'll make a better world for each of our worlds. You know, as many people as I always said that I'd rather have a million friends than one enemy. You know, I think that's a beautiful thing. You know, I always had that motto with me, you know, because I enjoy people. I enjoy, you know, people coming together with like-mindedness of wanting to create a better world and, you know, for kids to enjoy and see smiles on families' faces and not having a Yuvari mind. We're all hackable. You know, that type of mentality upon people and Klaus Schwab thinking only the people in the room is making the world go around. You know, what about the people out there in the world that is making the world go around? You know, what about those warehouse workers? What about them people cleaning toilets? What about people that work in the restaurants? You know, all around this land, you know, all around the world that make their countries move. You know, you forget about that little man. You go and listen to Alan Jackson, the country singer, talking about the little man. Yeah, it's about that little man. That little man make the world go around. And y'all just don't, you know, a lot of companies/corporations don't realize that. It is the little man on a little woman, you know. And I'm not talking about short people. I'm talking about the little people who don't have the you know, the amounts of wealth that these 1%ers have, or 0.001%, you know, or these billionaires. Even this guy was speaking about that in that book of the coercion. You know, he said, you got these, you know, these people like the Zuckerberg and the, Jeff Bezos. They're at the top fighting amongst themselves, right? And then you got all of these billionaires, and they got more of them today. And you got them, you know, fighting it out. You know, those billionaires fighting it out amongst themselves. And then you got all the rest, you know, sitting here trying to fight for the scraps. You know, but which the billionaires are not sharing the wealth of the little people that's, you know, trying to scrounge for the scraps. You know, they're just fighting amongst themselves of making better profits for their stores or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the point being is what I'm saying, you know, and he was right. He was right on the money with all of that, you know. But we all feel the pain. We get hurt and become defensive, have dreams, bears tragedy. And failure, suffers from loneliness, needs to cry as well as laugh. Excuse me. He, too, is often misunderstood. The white man in the presence of the Indian is still mystified by his uncanny ability to make him feel uncomfortable. This may be the imagined image the white man has created of the Indian. His quote-unquote savageness has boomerang and isn't a mystery. It is fear. Fear of the Indian's temperament. High on a hill overlooking the famed Plymouth Rock stands the statue of our great sachem Massasoit. Massasoit has stood there many years in silence. We, the descendants of this great sachem, have been a silent people. The necessity of making a living in the materialistic society of the white man caused us to be silent. Today, I and many of my people are chosen to face the truth. We are Indians. Although time has drained our culture and our language is almost extinct, we, the Wampanoags, still walk the land of Massachusetts. We may be fragmented. We may be confused. Many years have passed since we have been a people together. Our lands were invaded. We fought as hard to keep our land as you, the whites, did to take our land away from us. We were conquered. We became the American prisoners of war in many cases and wards of the United States government until only recently. Our spirit refuses to die. Yesterday, we walked the woodland paths and sandy trails. Today, we must walk the macadam highways and roads. We are uniting. We're standing not in our wigwams, but in your concrete tent. We stand tall and proud, and before too many moons pass, we'll right the wrongs we have allowed to happen to us. We fortified our country. Our lands have fallen into the hands of the aggressor. We have allowed the white man to keep us on our knees. What has happened cannot be changed. But today, we must work towards a more humane America, a more Indian America, where men and nature once again are important, where the Indian values of honor, truth, and brotherhood prevail. You, the white man, are celebrating an anniversary. We, the Wampanoags, will help you celebrate in the concept of a beginning. It was the beginning of a new life for the pilgrims. Now, 350 years later, it is beginning of a new determination for the original American, the American Indian. There are some factors concerning the Wampanoags and other Indians across this vast nation. We now have 350 years of experience in living amongst the white man. We can now speak his language. We can now think as a white man thinks. We can now compete with him for the top jobs. We're being heard. We are now being listened to. The important point is that along with the necessities of everyday living, we still have the spirit. We still have the unique culture. We still have the will. And most important of all, the determination to remain as Indians. We are determined, and our presence here this evening is living testimony. This is the only beginning of the American Indian, particularly the Wampanoag, to regain the position in this country that is rightfully ours. Wamsutta, September the 10th of 1970. How you like that? Wow, 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 wow. Is that not mind-blowing, Sergeant Miller, or what? Let me go back, let me see. Let me see right here. And that was must have been his grandfather's speech. You know, that was man, that's like you know, stuff that I've never heard, you know, as far as say communities have been disproportionately impacted. Let's see. Now look at you go and look up let's see what it says right here. What I can do is I can copy this link, do that right there. I can go here and I can try to put that saying up in there. Let's see what it comes up with. Hubba hubba hubba. Use it faster than that, but it doesn't look like it's finding it. Oh, kidding. Let's see, let me try another way. Talking about the indigenous communities in the U.S. have been disproportionately impacted. And it talks about take time to learn the tribe whose land you're on. That would be interesting to note if we could come up with something like that. Let's see what it says. Let's see what it says right here. Anyway, go and check the blog. You can also check the room with a map. Right here it shows a map, but I was trying to find out if they had some actual stating about talking about the actual land that we're on. Native land disclaimer. This map does not represent an intent to represent official or legal boundaries of any indigenous nation. To learn about definitive boundaries, contact the nations in question. Also, this map is not perfect. It is a work in progress with the tons of contribution from the community. I'd like to read more about the ideas behind native land. Where we are going, check out the blog. Blog is in blue. And let's see. Is there a Canadian nonprofit in about joining a nonprofit? So I was trying to, they're showing, I guess, the different lands, like on the map. It's showing, like, now it looks like it's more technologically in solidarity with frontline communities. It has quite a few dots on the map. You can add digital data to your own map, what it was saying. I was hoping they were going to give us some kind of readout of, on a tribe whose land you're on. So what I was going to try to do is I was going to try to see if they could come up with telling us, you know, about the land that we're actually on. But it's not wanting to. Let's see. But yeah, I was hoping that it was going to give us more readout of the do like this, and maybe I can try to find out something this way. Let me try to do it like this. Maybe they can give us it's like when you put it in, it's just like they don't even want to give you a readout. Like it just becomes like one big blank. So let me try it on a different site. Maybe we can try to come up with something different in that way. Let's see if we try it this way. But second. Come on. Let's see. talk about Native Americans viewed Thanksgiving as a day of mourning. Remind of the genocide of millions of Native people, the death of Native lands, and the relentless assault on Native culture. It says, why do Native Americans celebrate Thanksgiving? For Native peoples, Thanksgiving isn't a celebration. It's a national day of mourning, as we learned, right? So, you know, and you know, just like a human being speaking to another human being, I hope that everyone out there, you know, enjoyed, you know, Thanksgiving celebration with you all's family. You know, not taking away from anyone, you know, enjoying their, you know, celebration at Thanksgiving, celebration with you all's family. I hope that everything was actually, you know, wonderful, and it was a good day for you all. But, you know, it helps to know that, you know, that even though we go in our way of celebrating with our families, which we've done for ages, right? But when you come to this station and you see that in the wake of, you know, you really, when you set outside your own thoughts of, you know, I'm not being ugly when I say arrogance, okay? And that may be a little strong of a word. And so I'm not trying to put across as arrogance, okay? But you know what I'm saying. Like, but in a way of arrogance, you, if you will, or, you know, a people trying to, you know, be in a day of celebration of Thanksgiving, but not giving thought or even, you know, maybe have thought and, a given thought to that when they come to the Indian tribe nations, that you may have not really thought of really have forgotten, maybe, you know, you never forgotten, but you never really thought about it until, you know, someone brings it up like myself tonight and, you know, put it back on the map and strongly, you know, try to bring out in a different light, if you will, of a knowledge that we all gain together of people or of the tribal nations of, you know, what they sold. And you gotta give where credit where credit's due of this tribal chief. You know, he was trying to put it down as the white man wanted to rewrite his speech. And he was trying to, you know, put it down. Whereas to, so the people that may be listening to the show right now, and as well as myself, could get this new understanding or two new knowledge of, you know, not only, you know, did they suffer as a tribal nations, of different indigenous natives to this land, but, you know, of the white man, how that he has, you know, manipulated the ways. And we go back to the mind raping multimedia machine, you know, mainstream media that we all watch today, you know, that continues to tried to get us in the brainwashing mentality, right? And we, like my son kind of reiterated tonight, you know, the television, you know, tell us a vision, you know, it is a median, you know, in between, got to step in between as a median to tell us a vision, you see? You see? And that's what they're doing. They're so, you know, they coerce us into believing the next biggest thing, right? Isn't that what they're doing? They're telling us the next biggest thing of what needs to be told. And we should follow and be coerced after that next biggest thing. You see how they do that? So that's what I was just trying to state and put down of the what they solely doing. You know, they're giving us a tell us a vision. They telling us a vision of the way that they want us to be, to come to believe, you know, of the way they want us to see things, right? And that's exactly what they're doing. And I'm trying to get my basset hound out of here because, boy, these basset hounds, I don't know if y'all got a basset hound dog out there in the world, but, man, these suckers are, whoo, boy. These bad boys, they're their own breed in themselves, boy. These suckers here, boy, them suckers can be rough sometimes. But I'm proud to have him, glad to have him in the family. But, man, he gets to cutting up and doing different things. And I got to run him out of some places. And, man, that joker's active, boy. Woo. But he was laying by me last night, matter of fact. His name is Craig. And we've been having him a few months. And, boy, he's gotten big. He's definitely moved by food. So, yeah, it's just, but yeah, I'm just hoping that, you know, you all were able to see what I was able to see here tonight, of a people that, you know, they're celebrating Thanksgiving while honoring Indigenous heritage, you know, the National Day of, mourning, you know, and, this is, you know, and they express gratitude. You know, it says it's essential to delve into the multifaceted significance of the day for all people, particularly Indigenous communities. Along this celebration, it's equally essential to acknowledge and honor the National Day of Mourning for Native Americans. It is a day of remembrance and activism at 2190. Our commitment to learning and sharing essential narratives encourages us to shed light on a significant day for our readers. The National Day of Mourning coincides with Thanksgiving Day. Isn't that funny? How does that? It serves as a reminder for Indigenous communities across the United States. The National Day of Mourning is a yearly event with a primary goal to enlighten the public about the diverse Native American communities in the United States, particularly shedding light on tribes like the Wampanoag and various other Indigenous groups. Beyond education, this day unveils myths within the narrative of the American Thanksgiving story. Additionally, it seeks to bring attention to the enduring historical and present-day challenges experienced by the Native American tribes across the nation. This observance marked a recognition of the injustices, atrocities, and displacement experienced by Indigenous people throughout history. The National Day of Mourning confronts historical oversights more so. It offers a space for reflection, remembrance, and acknowledgement of the struggles faced by the Indigenous community. And there it is, people. I love y'all. Be safe. I'm John Mitchell on Thursday night. Sergeant Miller, be safe. Bring him. Love y'all. Help out where you can. We're all one people. Remember that. It's only when we work together.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Work together, people.
She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.